We were learning about Shalom Bayit, and now Rav Eliyahu Kitov enters a section in the book which initially I was certain I would skip over. But I read it on my own, and his thoughts are so profound that I think they're worth reading. He's entering in the discussion of Shalom Bayit. What happens when there isn't peace? What happens when a couple has to get divorced? And he enters the concept of divorce. Now, ordinarily, I don't feel like that has room in a class in Binyan HaBayit, because I feel like the attitude in the home always has to be, make it work. Not how, if, when, but yes, it will work. Make it work. There is no other option. You've got to make it work. I was at an anniversary now, 50 years of a couple, and the wife... What? No. They were married 50 years, and the wife gets up to speak, and she says, after 50 years, I've got to say about our marriage, it was okay. So I felt like crying. Poor husband. That's the best she can say. It was okay. But she said, it's got its ups, it's got its downs, it's like everything else in life. Thank God we've made it this far. I felt it was pretty somber. It wasn't a lugubrious comment I was expecting. But I wanted to cry. I didn't want to laugh. But the nice thing is that even though the best she can say is it was okay, they're still married. I think that the attitude in marriage has to always be, it's going to work. By hook or by crook, it's got to work. There's no other option. Because if you enter marriage with another option, it's not going to work. Marriage is difficult. And it can only work if the attitude is, we got to make it work. But he has some amazing thoughts about divorce, which give us insight into marriage. And that's why I think it's worth reading this section. I'm going to skip around a little bit. The first thing he says is that the concept of divorce is also there for shalom. God always wanted peace. Divorce is only when there's a situation where it's impossible to have any form of peace in the home. So then God says, okay, so then at least there should be peace in the world by their separating. Now, the problem I have with this is that very often people feel like, oh, it's better for both of us, so we'll get divorced. Who needs it? It's not good for the kids. So much fighting, so much arguments. More and more people are coming to the realization, psychologists are coming to the realization that kids need two parents. And the harm done by a divorce is so great that it's very difficult to be able to say that it's better for the kids to have only one parent than to have parents that are fighting. Obviously, parents shouldn't be fighting. But to say that the damage that the kids are incurring by the fact that there isn't shalom bayis the way there should be, it outweighs the damage of the divorce, I'm not sure people can be as confident as they are to say that. And that's why I have an issue with this, because people, I think, misread this. I don't think that a couple can say that it's so difficult between us, so we'll get divorced. No, it's so difficult between them, so let them go to counseling. Let them figure out a different way to make it work, but definitely not divorce.
It's not just episode, this is something that I was very strongly about. It's not just the kids with both parents, but how to convince the parents together, working through the problems, sticking there, and the solidarity. It's huge. It's going to be something that we're going to call it, like my parents stuck together as well. It's about the biggest victory in
Yeah, I'm saying at the bare minimum, at least that. If not more than that, of course it has to be more than that. But what I liked about what he develops is a different point. He discusses a Gemara which bothers many people. The Mishnah says like this. Beis Shammai says, a man should not divorce his wife unless he found her doing something improper when it comes to arayas. He can't be confident in her that she's faithful to him. So then there are issues going on when it comes to faithfulness in the bedroom. So that's the only time one may divorce his wife, Beit Shammai say. Along come Beis Hillel, and they say, you know what? If she burnt his soup, he could divorce her. Along comes Rabbi Akiva and says, if he saw someone that was better looking than her, he can divorce her. So people read this in the end of Gittin, and they walk away with the feeling, hey, wait a second. How could that be? Just because you saw a better looking girl, you could divorce your wife? And that's why I thought his Rabbi Akiva. I thought his explanation of this verse is so beautiful that that's why I wanted to quote it here. Our sages did not say, when do we recommend the person get divorced? They didn't say we recommend that if one sees a better looking woman, he should divorce his wife. They didn't say we recommend that if one gets burnt chon to one Shabbos, he should divorce his wife. They said that the halacha does not bind the person to marriage. And if there's any small cause that he would want to get a divorce, halachically, he may get it. Now, when we approach family life in Israel, our sages taught us that if a couple get divorced, even the Mizbeach sheds tears. The last thing that our parents wanted to see was divorce. The last thing that our sages wanted to see was divorce. And they discussed how terrible it is and how a person should know that his source of atonement is his wife. And they gave us many, many verses that we've been discussing, many quotes about the importance of maintaining the family structure. If married life, if family life in Israel were just a question of partnership, partnership that's fun, then we'd have a totally different attitude to marriage. Then, if you have a partner and you see another partner who's better looking, it doesn't make sense to dissolve the partnership. But family life in Israel, family life among the Jewish people, is not like the partnerships that we see outside of the Jewish people. It's a totally different entity. And only one who can understand the Jewish people and what family life is within the Jewish people can begin to understand this verse that our sages told us. Rabbi Akiva taught us that if a husband and wife married, then the Shekhinah is between them. And if not, then fire consumes them. Family life within Israel, we view the husband and wife as a mishkan, as a source of holiness. It could also be a source of the fires of perdition. But the Jewish home is supposed to be a mishkan. The purpose of the Jewish home is for the sake of honoring heaven. In general, our sages taught us that if you try to attain too much, you won't get anything. If you try to attain a little, then you'll get what you're aspiring to. When it comes to the Jewish home, our sages said that the only type of good home is a home where the husband doesn't find anything wrong with his wife. And he doesn't find any woman to be more attractive than his wife. If he finds something wrong with her, if he thinks there's someone else more attractive than her, then that's not the type of marriage our sages wanted him to have. Now, why is it that our sages are telling us you're supposed to be in marriage and you're supposed to think, my wife is the most beautiful woman in the world, she's perfect? Because this is one of the foundations for the peace in the home. It's an attitude. Our sages taught us that when we're married, we're supposed to really connect with that other person. Do you ever look at your hand and tell yourself, his hand is nicer?
Yeah.
Yeah? You do? Really?
Beautiful.
Really? Interesting. Okay.
As soon as you're jealous of something that someone else has to
do. Right. We'll get there. When our sages helped us lay the foundations for our home, they wanted us to have a home that will be eternal. They said that a person has to develop within himself the ability to see within his wife all her good traits and be happy with her as though she were the only woman in the world. Hashem says, if you can behave that way, then I want to be part of your home. A person has to evolve. If he's not seeing her that way, he has to know there's something lacking in him. He has to pray. He has to better himself. If a person is going to walk through marriage thinking, is there someone else better looking out there? He's already planting within his home the source of the fire that our sages warned us is not there when Shalom Bayis is there. Rabbi Akiva tells us that even if a person finds someone else better looking, that's enough to give him permission to get divorced. Our nature is that when something is forbidden, we want it more. Our sages taught us stolen waters are sweeter. What did Rabbi Akiva do when Rabbi Akiva said, if you find someone better looking, you could have her? What Rabbi Akiva did in effect was he said, you're not stuck in marriage. When you take a person and tell him, you could stay in this room, you could go out, you could come to learn, you could leave, suddenly it's easier to stay and learn. You tell a person, you have to stay in this room. If you step foot out of this room, oh, what's going to happen to you? Now suddenly it's difficult to stay in the room. What Rabbi Akiva did, what our sages did, was they made marriage something which is of immense value, of immense potential, and not difficult to get out of. You don't want to? You can leave. They didn't say it's easy. They said there's a ksuba. You do have to pay. It's not like it's free. Tomorrow you could get up and walk out. They wanted to ensure that if a husband gets upset at his wife, he can't just say, okay, I've had it, I'm out of here. But on the other hand, they didn't want to make it impossible. There were different movements in the world, be it religions or movements, that tried both aspects. Some tried to go to the extreme of making it free. You could come when you want and leave when you want. They didn't succeed in building nice homes. Some tried to make it that it's impossible to divorce one's wife. They didn't succeed in making good homes. Only this balance, which says, on the one hand, it's not free, it's not the easiest thing in the world. A husband does have to shell out a certain amount of money. On the other hand, you're not stuck. You don't like it, you could leave. Only that balance gives the man the feeling of freedom that allows him to overcome his desire to chase after freedom. This permission caused that a person would not feel constricted within the marriage. What?
Makes sense.
Our sages were wondering, what's the best for the couple? How much freedom does a man have to feel in his marriage? And Rabbi Akiva came along and said, they have to feel like there's no binding. They have to feel like he doesn't have to justify why he wants to get divorced. You want to? It's the door's open. When I was a kid, so one of the things my father did that I vehemently disagreed with was he didn't force us to pray. We'd get up in the morning, we didn't have to go down. I had siblings who reached pretty mature age. They weren't 5 or 6. And they didn't go to shul. They didn't go down. And I came to my father and I said, what's going on? I mean, we have to daven. And my father said, no. You tell a person you don't have to daven. When you feel like connecting with your Creator, you'll come daven. He sees me go daven. He sees you go daven. And I insist, one thing, speak to your Creator once a day. Say a small amount of prayer. How much? I'm not getting involved in you and your Creator. A certain amount, yeah, but beyond that, no. And the product is that each child goes and davens in shul. You want to educate a person, you want to move a person forward, you have to give them the freedom. You come and tell a person, you have to, you must. Yeah, okay. And a person feels like, I'm not in control and maybe I don't want to. In the earlier generations when people were better, so our sages could assume that a person, if he's divorcing his wife, has purity in his heart. Our sages said a person works so hard to build a marriage, to build a home. If he's divorcing her, there must be good reason. Who would want to destroy such a thing? So our sages left them like the Torah says. You want to? Open door policy. You have to pay the ksuba, but not more than that. As the generations started going down, our sages instituted more, guards to help us maintain the marriage the way it should. And our sages said a man may not divorce his wife against her consent. There's more, but this was the main idea which I wanted us to discuss today. We have 6-7 more minutes. I want us to go over to something else. And then the class we always discuss things. In marriage, sometimes we feel that something has to be different. It could be major, it could be minor. On minor things, so people sometimes feel like, why should I mention it? But could be he's used to eating his salad cut small, and she's used to cutting it big. Now, that's not a big deal. But if after a few months he feels like he can't get used to it, so maybe he should mention it. There are minor things. Let's say she likes putting onions in the egg salad, and he doesn't like eating onions. That's not a big deal. But sometimes a person feels like doesn't make sense, that should be an issue, but it does bother me. So when there's something that has to be mentioned, the first thing is, better not. Who says it's going to bother you after a day, a week, a month? Hold off. And the second thing is that it's always better to strengthen the positive, to complement the positive, than to make mention of what should be different. For example, a guy wants his home to be cleaner. So he could tell his wife, you know, it's embarrassing me already. Guys, I'm bringing guests home and their feet are sticking to the floor. He could say that and hurt her feelings. Or he could wait for a time that she cleans the home and tell, boy, it's so nice. I appreciate it so much the way you clean the house. He strengthened the positive. When a person strengthens the positive, when we give positive reinforcement, the automatic reaction is, I want to do more of that. So that's the second thing. And this is something which can be used a lot without the spouse knowing. And that gives you great advantage. The other person doesn't even realize that you're helping them evolve in the direction that's better for you or better for the couple. I don't think any person would mind being complimented on the positive. Even if on some level she realized it, why would it bother? Think, put yourself in her shoes for a second. Let's say every night you get to bed, you put your socks next to the bed. Or worse, you leave them on the bed. So she could comment, you know, I'd like to breathe at night also. Or she could wait for the one time that you happen to toss them into the hamper and say, I appreciate it so much that you put in the hamper. It's so nice. And you think, wait a second, what does that mean? I don't think that would bother a person. I don't think so. When we reinforce positively, so everyone gains. The next thing is that we have to know that women hear things differently than men. A girl tries on a skirt and she asks, how does it look? Right. And he says, I think maybe you should try a size bigger. And she says, you said what? What nerve? You said I'm fat? You said I'm the fattest lady in the store? I didn't say that, honey. I just said be one size bigger. No, that's not what you said. You said I'm fat. You said you don't like how I look. We say one thing, they hear another. Why? They're more sensitive. So a small comment by a husband is heard by his wife as a major comment. I was once by a couple that's married many years. They're old enough to be my parents. And she was discussing with my wife that there was a dress she had, and she hasn't worn it in about 10 years. So my wife asked her, why not? She said, I really like this dress. And then I once wore it, and I asked my husband, how do you like it? And he said, oh, I like the other one better. So she didn't quote it this way. She said to my wife, my husband doesn't like that dress. So the husband was sitting present, and he said, what do you mean I don't like that dress? It's a very nice dress. So she said, yeah, you're saying it's very nice, but you don't like it. She said, what do you mean I don't like it? It's a very nice dress. She said, yeah, but you like the other ones better. So he's like sitting there trying to figure out what she's talking about. And after the conversation evolves, it turns out that 10 years earlier, she had tried it on once and asked him, how do you like it? And he said, oh, I like the other one better. So she said, oh, he doesn't like this dress. But that's it. The dress is doomed. It happened to be a dress she spent a lot of money on. That's why they all remembered it. He remembered it and she remembered it. But they hear things differently. They're more sensitive. Yeah. Oh, so let's take a more practical example. A couple agrees that they're going to meet at a certain time and go to a chasana, right? They agree they're going to meet at 7. She shows up at 7:30. So he's been waiting for a half hour. So he asks her, so he comes in and they're already running late. So he asks her, is everything all right? She says, yeah. He says, didn't we agree that we'd meet at 7? She says, didn't you tell me that you want me to prepare supper for tonight? Yeah, but didn't we agree we'd meet at 7 and we'd go to the wedding? And her response is, why are you so upset at me? I didn't say I was so upset, he responds. I didn't say I was so upset. I'm just trying to understand. She's deeply offended. He's just asked, right? As a male, you understand them very well. Ask any female and they'll understand her very well. Is that avoidable?
No, but I'm asking myself, for example, when I'm with friends, male friends, it's really nice to talk and spend the day with each other. And can't you just have something like that with a wife?
You could.
No,
I definitely think, I think that one of the things that a couple checks out when they date is that they enjoy talking together. One person once said that when you get married, it's like you're walking in a minefield. You take a step and it explodes in front of you. And then you say, okay, I won't step there again. And then you start walking again. And again, you get an explosion. And you say, okay, I won't step there either. Now, that sounds pretty bad. Like marriage has to be a minefield. But the truth is that we learn to understand one another and how we listen to one another, how we hear one another. And if we're open to evolving and changing, then we can learn to be sensitive to one another's needs. There's a couple where she can't stand his spending a penny. So if he's going to go and buy a popsicle stick, he has to hide it from her. Because otherwise he'll come back and she's going to say, how are we going to pay the mortgage? And you know we have tuition to pay? And then how'd you spend those 30 cents on a popsicle stick? And he's like, it was a popsicle stick. It was 30 cents. And she's, yeah, I know you. You're always spending money. So the next time he wants to buy a popsicle stick, he's wondering, is it worth her wrath? So he doesn't want to live his life in fear of his wife. So with time, hopefully she'll learn not to get upset about a popsicle stick. And he'll learn that he can't spend $1,000 on a new shas without discussing it with her. And each one learns more about the other if they're open to it. You'll see couples that are married 20 years and they're squabbling about the same thing for 20 years. It's very sad. But hopefully, two things. A couple respects one another and enjoys one another. And then they're open to hearing from one another. And things are fun, but difficult. And then they evolve to being more fun and less difficult. there are life's difficulties, but the difficulties in communication between spouses, hopefully with time, become easier. We're enumerating some of them so that you'd be prepared for them. It's unfortunate that many people are not prepared for them, because even people who have had girlfriends, a girlfriend will not react the way a wife will react, because a girlfriend lives in constant fear that the relationship might be over. There's never that closeness, that confidence that we're married, and therefore the behavior is more superficial. The real behavior that happens in marriage, which people will mock and make fun of, is really an outgrowth of the closeness, that she has confidence in the relationship. And then we have to learn how to deal with that, how to understand it, and modify ourselves to it, and hopefully also they modify, and together we fuse.
Just to make a point about the whole clothing, how to look in clothing, because anything about them is actually no direct answer to that question. Because if you say, oh, you look beautiful, but
now you're just saying that, you always need
or you just have to lie.
So if you brought that up, we could just mention when a wife says you're just saying that, usually what she means to say is you didn't say that with enough vehemence. Did you really mean it? No, think about it. I didn't say you should lie. I never said you should lie. If you don't think it looks nice on her, then you have to figure out how to say it. Different strokes for different folks. Depends on who you are and who she is.
The best way is to make it positive by saying something else actually looks really nice, and that looks okay.
Well, there's a difference between trying on something in a store when you're going to buy it and something that she already owns. Something that you've liked for 10 years and now she's pregnant, or now she's gained weight, and something that you didn't like for 10 years. Okay, a lot of it depends on the circumstance. It's hard to take an example and just say this is the prototype. What? Say that, it's a positive mindset. Okay, that's a nicer example, right? I'm for it. I think that's a nice way of saying it. I agree.